Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Georgia Republican Austin Scott, who joins us to discuss the upcoming lame duck session and the 2023 Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Mexico says it is willing to make a deal to annually exempt American-grown feed from an upcoming ban on genetically modified corn imports. The announcement comes days after Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack warned Mexico's president against banning genetically modified corn and threatened possible action under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Farm groups, including the National Corn Growers Association, have urged USDA to take a more aggressive stance against the proposed ban, which is expected to go into effect in 2024. The Environmental Protection Agency rolled out growing biofuel blending targets for the next 3 years. The agency's announcement of renewable volume obligations under the Renewable Fuel Standard includes volumes through 2025 and expansion for each year. There's also growth in the volumes available for corn ethanol from the traditional 15 billion gallons and a path for electric vehicles to have a role in the program. EPA was required by a consent decree with Growth Energy to sign off on its proposal on Wednesday and must finalize the volumes in June. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score said the group is grateful for the program's upward trajectory. And finally, Congress passed legislation to avoid a rail strike and enforce a deal reached by negotiators earlier this year. Members of the House and Senate voted on a bill to enforce a deal reached earlier this year, but not yet ratified by four of the industry's 12 unions, and a separate bill to add more paid sick days to the deal. President Joe Biden called on Congress to act on the subject Monday due to the possibility of a rail strike beginning December 9th. When faced with a similar situation in September, railroad companies took steps to halt fertilizer shipments ahead of the actual date a strike could have taken place. Fertilizer companies worried that could happen again. The agreement gives workers a 24% raise over a five-year period. The bill to enforce it received bipartisan support in the House, but the majority of the chamber's Republicans voted against the measure. Among that group was Georgia Republican Austin Scott. When we spoke with him, we asked him why the measure didn't gain his support.
It's a 24% wage increase. It's a retroactive wage increase. You've got a situation with the rails where you have pretty much an unregulated monopoly in certain areas, if not a monopoly, an oligopoly, and then you have unions in control of those things. In many cases. And so we've got a bad situation in this country with transportation. We should have never allowed ourselves to get into that position. But it's a 24% retroactive wage increase. And what we're doing when we approve things like this is we're rewarding bad behavior. That's not reasonable. Most Americans are not getting a 24% wage increase. Most Americans, when they do get a wage increase, don't get it retroactively. And certainly when you talk about the increased cost of that, it's going to be embedded in the price of everything that we buy in this country. And so I would challenge everybody listening to this to go through a Home Depot or a Lowe's or a hardware store and see if you can find an American-made power tool anymore. And the fact of the matter is the unions have gone too far in this country, and we've unioned ourselves out of a lot of the jobs in the manufacturing sector.
Mm-hmm. So was your opposition to this particular and your vote in this particular case an issue with the deal itself or with the structure of the rail industry?
More so with the deal itself and the fact that it actually had to be brought to Congress is frustrating to me. But it is an unreasonable demand from the unions that they get a 24% wage increase retroactively, or they're going to shut down the U.S. economy. They shouldn't have that much control over the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm. So I want to pivot to different subjects as well here. Obviously, right now in the lame duck session, a number of things on the agenda for Congress, including a government funding bill and some other kind of last-minute legislation that folks are hoping to move still in the current Congress for your farm policy priorities. Anything in particular you'd like to see resolved here in the lame duck?
Yeah, there are issues with crop insurance and other things where we're very concerned about the increased cost of production and want to make sure that if there is anything done in some type of omnibus bill, that we make sure that we give the funds that are necessary for the crop insurance system to the USDA so that we're able to operated effectively. We know we're going to have increased cost of operations and inputs in agriculture next year. And so we just, you know, we would ask that if there is an omnibus bill, that we make sure that we are giving the USDA the resources necessary to you know, allow our producers to hedge their risk through the crop insurance system.
We'll be right back with more from House Ag Committee Republican Austin Scott right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Earlier this week, South Dakota Republican John Thune said Senate Republicans might try to use the upcoming debt limit negotiations to leverage congressional Democrats into spending cuts. In the House, Georgia Republican Austin Scott says that's an idea he would support, but understands it will be politically difficult.
I don't know that I see it happening between now and December, but I will tell you, we spend too much money in this country. We've got $31 trillion in debt. And I do think that we have a lot of agencies out there that we have continued to fund at increased levels that are not currently authorized or and haven't been reauthorized in decades in this country. So I think one of the things that we should push forward is that any agency that is not operating under a current authorization, their funding levels should be frozen and they should not receive any increase until that agency is reauthorized. And then you can have some negotiations along those lines. I certainly think that as we look at the national debt, we have to be honest about where we are. It's over $30 trillion right now. It has not had the impact on the federal budget because interest rates have been so low in the past. And now that interest rates are moving up, you're going to see it continuing to take a bigger and bigger chunk out of the cash flow of the country. And so while it's been a concern for many of us for a long period of time, it is now going to become a cash flow issue. You can't simply run trillion-dollar deficits in the country and not address total spending. So I think he's right with his concept of total spending cuts in exchange for whatever the debt limit increase would be.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Farm Bill. Obviously, we're in the post-midterm election environment. We know a lot more about the makeup of Congress for the upcoming Farm Bill reauthorization. But we also know that the House Republicans will have the majority, but it will be a very, very slim majority. Wondering what you think the impact of that slim majority will be on the legislation that chamber is going to be able to produce.
Well, I think it means that we'll be taking smaller steps in the right direction instead of the bigger steps that we had hoped to take if we had a larger majority. When it comes to what we do with nutrition, I think we'll have an honest debate over whether or not we should limit choices, if you will, and make changes in what people can buy with SNAP benefits. I'll tell you, one of the things that makes sense to me is to allow people to buy some of the hot foods like rotisserie chicken and other things that actually are healthy. And it doesn't make sense to me that we allow people to buy candy bars with SNAP benefits. So if it is about nutrition, then I do think that we need to have that honest debate about what people are allowed to buy. And on one side, we can expand it. Rotisserie chicken, I think, is probably the best example of good, healthy food that people should be allowed to buy. And I think that on the other side, we probably need to restrict access to the candies, if you will. So I hope we have that debate when it comes to total spending on the nutritional aspect of things. I hope that we will see an able-bodied working age adult requirement put in, and whatever savings we have there, then we can turn around and we can give those savings to whether it be the food banks or whether it be school lunch programs. I do think that we do need to make sure that we're taking care of people who can't take care of themselves, but we don't need to have this system that allows people to take advantage of it by simply choosing not to work. So those are debates that we're going to continue to have. We'll have other debates over the cost of ag inputs and what needs to be done with crop insurance and the ability for people to hedge their losses. And that's going to be a huge debate. I'll tell you, I do not see inflation going away in agriculture. I look at what's happening in Europe and fertilizer production, nitrogen, potash, the other things that used to come from Russia and Belarus and the Black Sea, Those are off the markets. We can't. We will look at how we would help build nitrogen manufacturing and other potential fertilizer manufacturing inside the United States. But I'm very concerned about the lack of fertilizer that we'll have next year because of the shutdowns in Europe right now because of the cost of energy over there. And just proof again that good energy policy is what the U.S. has got to have if we're going to have good ag policy. Those two go hand in hand.
Well, and let's talk about some of those costs of inputs and some of the margins that producers that producers are facing, because we've already seen a number of commodity groups call for in kind of their policy processes, call for increases in things like reference prices, call for additional commodity supports. But are you all going to have room in a very tight budget scenario to offer that kind of assistance?
Well, I think we'll have to. And the bottom line is, you know, with higher input costs, You simply got to have a higher reference price because your loss number changes, right? I mean, if it costs you a dollar to grow something that a year or two ago it was costing you 80 cents to grow, then your break even is at a dollar, not at 80 cents. And so I think we have to have an honest discussion about the reference prices. The other thing that I'm very concerned about that we haven't talked about yet is if you look at what they're doing with the H2A wages, you're looking at an administration that is mandating a 14% wage increase on H2A labor. Well, guess what? I mean, the countries that we're competing with, that my producers specifically are competing with, Mexico, they're not having to eat those wage increases. And so we're seeing a continuing number of things done through the Biden administration that is harmful to American agriculture and our food supply and makes us more dependent on foreign countries for that food supply. So we're gonna have that honest debate about increased cost of diesel, increased cost of fertilizer, increased cost of wages, taking fumigants and other chemicals off the market. And then you turn around and you see the left coming back and saying, well, we want to take some of the money out of production agriculture. They want to take some of the money out of production agriculture for environmental related policies. We simply can't let that happen. We cannot let the environmentalists step into the funds that are currently used to support production agriculture and the food supply in the United States and move those funds to environmental policy. There's very little left for production agriculture as it is in the Farm Bill.
Well, and I want to follow up and I guess wrap up our conversation asking about a piece of legislation that you introduced. I believe it was in the first year of the current Congress, and that was to expand the Commodity Credit Corporation, the borrowing limit available to the CCC. That was legislation that you introduced prior to seeing some of the work that the Biden administration, Secretary Vilsack, has done with the CCC, in particular the things like the Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities. Does growth in the CCC, is growth in the CCC something you still support after seeing the way it has been used by both the Biden administration now and the Trump administration before that?
I do think that the CCC is extremely important to production agriculture in this country. I'm disappointed in the way they have chosen to use those funds for environmental related policy instead of for production agriculture. And I think that's one of the areas that when we go to write the Farm Bill, you know, we're going to have to make sure that funds that are set aside for production agriculture do not get stolen from production agriculture and put into the things that they were never intended for. But you understand we're dealing with an administration like we've never dealt with before. This administration has much less respect for the law and the Constitution than any presidential administration that I have ever dealt with. Very much more liberal and abusive than the Obama administration. And so I'm very concerned about making sure that we put the guardrails on the funds so that the funds for production agriculture stay in production agriculture. And obviously we have to be much more careful with them than we have in the past because of the lack of integrity in the agency now.
Congressman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at the latest farm income figures from the Department of Agriculture in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA rolled out a new farm income forecast this week, and the numbers are about 10% higher than what analysts projected just a few months ago. This chart from the USDA shows the U.S. net farm income and net cash farm income adjusted for inflation from 2002 through 2022's projected totals. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's based on cash receipts from farming, plus government payments and other farm-related income, minus cash expenses. Net cash farm income is forecast at $187.9 billion in 2022. That's an increase of more than $39 billion from last year, an 11% bump from USDA's earlier estimate. The projected total would put net farm income at its highest level since the USDA ERS inflation-adjusted data series began in 1929. Net farm income, represented by the blue line, is a broader measure of profits after expenses from production in the current year. It's forecast at $160.5 billion in 2022. Net farm income is expected to increase by $10.7 billion compared to last year, and will be at its highest level since 1973. Cash receipts from the sale of agricultural commodities and sales of animal and animal products are also all projected to increase. Government payments are pulling projections down and are forecast to drop about $9.4 billion this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
At Bayer, we know possibility grows from the seed of a vision. That you can start small and still reach big dreams. That we can nurture the future in our schools to create innovations down the road. That rural communities aren't just farms, but all the people they feed. That's why Bayer partners with farmers to protect those ideas. Because together, we're tending tomorrow's harvest.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are excited to have a discussion on the upcoming Farm Bill with a panel of experts this week, joined by Jonathan Kappas with the University of Illinois, RJ Carney with NASDA, and Danielle Beck with Invariant. Appreciate all of you taking the time. And Danielle, I want to go to you first, because we know now, post-midterm elections, what the congressional makeup is going to be in the House and Senate. And we know it's going to be a very, very thin majority for House Republicans as they work to govern and, among those things, pass a Farm Bill. Wondering, what do you think we should expect in terms of a Farm Bill environment based on that thin majority in the House?
You know, I think the cast of characters is going to be different next Congress, but ultimately the plot is still the same. I am pretty confident we're going to get a Farm Bill done. There's going to be a lot of differing opinions. There's going to need to be a lot of educational efforts, but we have great leadership in the House. You know, soon-to-be Speaker Kevin McCarthy had to manage a Farm Bill process when he was whip in the House several years ago, and GT has been doing a lot of work to lay, you know, laying the groundwork to ensure we're successful next Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in that whipping process that that Kevin McCarthy was working on that you mentioned, they did struggle to get some support from some of the more right-wing members of the GOP caucus. What do you think that means for the upcoming Farm Bill?
You know, at the time, he said it was the hardest job when he was minority whip. You know, half of the committee at the time was brand new. Moving into the new Congress, I think we're going to see a lot of the same, roughly 20% turnover rate for House Ag next year. We'll probably pick up four new seats. But one really exciting thing is there are a lot of freshmen coming in who are excited about ag. I think the interest in participating in the Farm Bill, in serving on the Agriculture Committee, is at an all-time high. We have a ton of members who are really eager to, you know, move the ball forward on sound agricultural policy. Obviously, there's going to have to be some hard debates and conversations in which, you know, Republicans and Democrats meet in the middle. But ultimately, that deliberative process is how we get there. And so the route might be different. We're not really sure what the end product is going to look like, but I think we're going to get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jonathan, obviously, we are all of agriculture really is keeping a very close eye on the dollar signs headed into this next Farm Bill, in particular, whether or not new money is going to be introduced into the equation. But I wonder, from your perspective, what role do you think the money that was included in the Inflation Reduction Act is going to play in that conversation of whether or not the Farm Bill is going to need new money?
Well, I think first and foremost, there won't be new money. And so the Inflation Reduction Act funding is kind of as close as the Farm Bill is likely to get. And I think you're right. I think the budget questions and what's available and where it's spent and the priorities from the under the budget baseline that the committees have to work with are going to be huge drivers in this question and huge drivers in getting a bill done and what that bill might even look like.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that with that IRA funding, do you think changing the way it's allocated might allow for lawmakers to turn that money into some permanent baseline?
That's a tough question that I also am trying to figure out and understand. Is can that, you know, can those funds be rescinded and repurposed, and how that will impact CBO's scoring mechanism, Congressional Budget Office's scoring mechanism over the 10-year budget window that they work with. At this point in time, I have not seen anything that gives a clear set of guidance or indication of how they're going to treat it. But it's much as it's going to be depending on how, you know, they look at the way it spends out over 10 years and what any kind of changes to that might, you know, might be assumed by them or estimated by them to offset. Say if you wanted to increase a program and you use that as an offset, how that would work. And I have not seen anything on that yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, so obviously, keeping in mind the conversations about the budget and the amount of money that is going to be available to this farm bill, RJ, if that pot of money, you know, doesn't grow as we just discussed, what do you anticipate will be the provisions in line for growth in this upcoming farm bill? We're already seeing some commodity groups push for increases in reference prices. There's been big increases in the baseline for nutrition. Wondering, what do you think will be the provisions in line for growth?
Well, this is going to be the question of the day, especially beginning next year. As Danielle mentioned, with the new team coming on board, both the House and Senate with some new members, they have to gear up their staff and really dive into the availability. Much to what Jonathan said, I think the question of the day is going to be, will there be an opportunity to grow a baseline? That's going to be the initial discussion that I think the staff is going to have to deal with. If ultimately there is no growth on the baseline, then there's going to be a lot of decisions that are made. We're going to continue to hear discussions on climate programs, as you mentioned, with the importance of something else we hear quite a bit about, and something that I think we continually hear is number 6 on a list of 5 or 11 on a list of 10 is agricultural research. Tough decisions will be made, but ultimately it's going to come down to that initial question that you asked, Jonathan, which is there going to be growth on the baseline? And I think that's what a lot of us are waiting to hear what determination is made on that path.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. House Republicans could be relying on some of the chamber's Democrats to help advance a farm bill absent the support of some of their caucus's more right-wing members. Jonathan Kappas with the University of Illinois says that could change the political calculus of growing the farm bill baseline.
Well, I think that's a huge question. It's with that thin majority in the House, what's the focus, what's the priority, particularly from leadership? Are they looking to go after spending cuts like we've seen in, well, the last two farm bills, in which the focus on spending cuts drove us into a partisan political fight over SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And that really complicates the farm bill process. So if the focus from leadership is going to be on that spending cut, it's going to be really hard, to get the majority votes they want. And it's going to be certainly nearly impossible to get a bipartisan set of votes in the House. So it's that priority setting component of this that we'll see early in the new Congress, which then starts driving a lot of these questions around what gets cut, you know, what funding gets moved, and how does that then attract or push away votes in a 4-vote, 3 or 4 or 5-vote majority House.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've talked a lot about the House, but over in the Senate, it's looking like we're going to retain the same chair of the Agriculture Committee over there. What do you anticipate will be the priority issues for Senator Stabenow that will impact the farm bill that we see on the Senate side of Capitol Hill?
I mean, I think you've seen her, Chairwoman Stabenow's priorities throughout the last three farm bills, really, and the Inflation Reduction Act. So climate change, conservation efforts, specialty crops, and of course, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Those have been top priorities, risk management issues around farmer interests and concerns, you know, fit within some of that. But I think she's gonna have a lot to work with, particularly again, if the House is intent on cutting spending and going after SNAP, it'll be, you know, kind of a lot of recycling possibly from the 2012, 13, 14 process and what we saw there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Danielle, bringing you back into the fold here, obviously we've spent the bulk of our conversation talking about the farm bill. It's going to be such a critical issue for ag policy in the upcoming Congress. But when you look at the split Congress and think about the agricultural issues and priorities and frankly the schedule of issues that are ahead of you, anything else from a farm policy perspective you're going to be watching for movement in the upcoming Congress?
There are going to be a lot of regulatory initiatives coming out of the Biden-Harris administration that I think we'll be keeping a close eye on. And then how House Republicans decide to respond to some of those are going to be really important. I also think we can anticipate a lot more action from House Agriculture Appropriations. You know, right now we've seen sort of slow action in terms of committee oversight there, but we know that next Congress Republicans are really going to be leaning into that oversight role. And so I think we can gear up for a very busy appropriations season. You know, what the end result looks like, you know, is the big question there, but there's going to be a lot of activity in that space.
Mm-hmm. RJ, I want to wrap up the conversation with you. We spent a lot of our time talking about things that we expect to happen, you know, after the beginning of January, but we've still got a lame duck session to wrap up here. I wonder, as you think about the things that need to be accomplished between now and the end of this current Congress, anything in particular you're watching for passage in the lame duck session?
I would say a top priority for us and for many in the ag industry is to finally see the confirmations of Doug McCaleb for Chief Ag Negotiator, and then Alexis Taylor as Undersecretary for Trade at USDA. Those are two key positions for ag. We really need to see some substantial action taken within ag trade policy, opening new markets, and those are the positions that are just gonna lead the charge. So many amongst the ag group, recently there's a letter sent up to the Senate, asking for quick confirmation before the end of the year. But in addition, you also heard Danielle talking about appropriations for 2024. We're still looking to close out appropriations for 2023 as well. So it'll be an action-packed December. Here we are on December 1st. Congress has a lot on its plate to get across the finish line, but I would say those two key confirmations are going to be at the top of the list for NASDA, but also for many across the ag industry.
Very good. Yes, as you mentioned, we are at the beginning of what will be an action-packed December, headed into what will probably be an action-packed 2023 on Capitol Hill, which will then head into an election year. There's plenty of things for us to talk about going forward, but I appreciate all of you taking the time to talk about what's on the agenda for right now. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at ag export forecasts for the next year in this week's Map It Out.
The Department of Agriculture has lowered its fiscal 2023 forecast for U.S. ag exports to $190 billion, a $3.5 billion drop from the agency's last estimate in August. This map shows U.S. agricultural export numbers by country for fiscal year 2023. China is expected to once again be the largest foreign market for U.S. agriculture at an estimated $34 billion. However, USDA believes the country will be buying less soybeans, cotton, sorghum, and pork. The next two highest foreign markets are Canada and Mexico. But U.S. export forecasts are down for both countries, largely due to less trade of soybeans, corn, and pork. The biggest reason for the lower numbers? That's because of reductions in the forecast for soybean, corn, and cotton export value. According to USDA, soybean exports will be down $2.4 billion due to smaller domestic production and more competition from South America. Cotton exports are down $1 billion due to U.S. consumers buying more clothes and home textiles post-pandemic. Corn exports are down $600 million, primarily due to uncertainty about the future of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, as well as low water levels in the Mississippi River, slowing deliveries to the Gulf. With imports expected to increase to $199 billion, the U.S. ag trade deficit is expected to climb to $9 billion for fiscal year 2023. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Our Steve Davies will be at the American Seed Trade Association's CSS and Seed Expo in Chicago Monday through Thursday. On Monday, USDA will launch a nutrition research initiative tied to the Biden administration's cancer moonshot. Then on Tuesday, the Senate Ag Committee will hold a hearing on federal ag research programs. AgriPulse.com is your best bet for the latest on all this and all the other farm policy news you need. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.